That there is the sound of people sifting through the rubble after yet another day of fighting in Yemen. For months now, the country has been divided between Houthis, supported by former President Saleh, and an anti-Houthi coalition backed by Saudi Arabia and other Gulf states. Saudi-led airstrikes began in March with the declared aim of stopping the Houthi advance and reinstating displaced President Hadi. Thousands have been killed and infrastructure severely damaged in the conflict.
Yemen's health system is stretching to breaking point, with civilians and combatants alike relying on Médecins Sans Frontières volunteers for both emergency and basic treatment. Earlier, we spoke to MSF coordinator Christine Boussa, who is just back from a two-month stint managing the organisation's response in the Al-Daleh area, right on the front lines of the fighting. We began by asking her to describe what a day in her job looks like.
We actually receive severely wounded patients. They have head gunshots, chest gunshots, they have a shrapnel within their bodies, and some of them actually come to the hospital to just die because they come too late and there's nothing we can do anymore. Often we will be called into the hospital, into the emergency room in the middle of the night on both sides of the front line because we would receive wounded in the middle of the night. It could be at 11 o'clock, at 2 o'clock, at 4 o'clock in the morning. And then, you know, we would go back to bed, try to get a few hours of sleep. And then often in the morning, we would have a lot of actually civilian patients that will come. Women, you know, that are pregnant, that have nowhere else to go because most of the health structures now in Yemen and also in Adali Governorate are closed, public and private ones. I saw a lot of children that were quite badly dehydrated because of vomiting and diarrhea. We would receive a lot of elderly people because of the whole collapse of the health system. We're doing more than just the emergency care to try to support as many people as we can. But it's too much for us to also take on, you know.
And what about the interaction between these various groups of patients? Because you've got combatants from both sides of the conflict in your hospital. You've also got civilians who've been caught up in the violence and the knock-on consequences. Were there tensions between the different groups? Was there a sense of solidarity? What kind of interactions were you witnessing in the hospital?
Actually, there was a sense of solidarity, which I found quite inspiring. I often heard people saying at the end of the day, they're all people, they're all Yemeni, independent of where they're coming from. And for sure, we're stressing the fact again and again and again that the hospital has to stay a safe place. The hospital has to stay a place of peace, where anybody has to have access independent of where they're coming from, independent of their religion, of their political, you know, cultural affiliations. I was also working with my team to basically demilitarize both hospitals so that if we would receive combatants, that they would leave their arms outside of the hospital gates and they would come in, you know, as wounded patients without arms, without ammunition belts. And you know, that was a big part of my work.
You used the word inspiring, Christine. You said that your patients had inspired you. Is there perhaps a particular story, a particular case that touched you over the 2 months that you spent there?
Yeah, I mean, there were many. There were so many stories, but there were, we had a lot of women coming to the hospital with a lot of like pain. You know, they would come and they would just, because they had heard that female international staff is in town and they're like, oh, we want to go talk to them. All of them thought I'm a doctor and I'm actually not. I mean, I had doctors and nurses in my, obviously in my medical team, but I'm not a doctor, but everybody thought I'm a doctor. So they would also come to me and they were, you know, they asked, doctora, can you help me? And they would come and they would say, I have, you know, body pain, I have headaches, I cannot sleep, I feel nauseous every time I get up from my bed, I feel like fainting. And when I ask them what is happening, they're like, you know, it's just too much. Between the airstrikes and the shelling, because of the ground fighting, because many of them live at the outskirts of town, so they're even closer to the active front line where you have daily fighting going on with very heavy artillery, you know, tanks and rockets and mortars and outgoing and incoming shelling. So they're like, you know, we cannot sleep anymore and we're afraid to even get water. You know, I'm afraid to go to the market to get food because you never know when either an airstrike might hit. And I'm afraid for my children. I don't know what to do with them. Schools have been closed for months and months and months. And, you know, all they're talking about is how afraid they are. And they cry at night because they cannot sleep. They have nightmares. And often they would just say, you know, with all the boom, boom, they would always use the word boom, boom to describe the shelling, the fighting, the clashes. And they would put their hands to their head and just, you know, show their despair and kind of having all these psychosomatic reactions to the ongoing violence and to their daily struggle just to survive. And they came to the hospital just to talk to us. That for me was always very touching. So I would always spend also a lot of time just in the hospital, you know, listening. That was my job.
And those people who were coming to you for help, do you get a sense of who they blame or who they're looking to as well for a resolution to the conflict?
No, most people, they just told me, I just want to go about my life. I want to be in peace. I want to go back to the marketplace again without being worried. I want to have my children go back to school. I want to be able to travel again on the road without being scared. There was actually no shaming and blaming, at least from what I heard. They just want to have a normal life again and live in security and not have this daily fear. I mean, the people I've met have a lot of resilience, you know. They're very courageous. They have a lot of resilience. That touched me. And they have also a sense of solidarity, like supporting each other, you know. I've seen many families that have taken in displaced people because they had nowhere to go, and they would share their food with them and their water and give them some temporary shelter and kind of like just, you know, supporting each other and during this difficult time.